Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, February 12, 2016. With me today, I have Dave Hamilton. And how are you doing?
I'm fantastic. Thanks for having me today.
Awesome. And thank you for being here. And John Martellaro, how are you?
Marvelous.
That's excellent. And I'm so glad that you are here today with me as well. We have a couple topics that I think might get kind of involved. So I'm just going to jump us right in. And the first thing that I wanted to talk about, AT&T, they are teaming up with Intel and Ericsson. And what they're planning to do is start running some field trials on 5G wireless. So right now, for our wireless data connections on our iPhones, we can get 4G LTE. And so this will be what replaces 4G LTE. And the testing right now, this is all like really preliminary stuff, because the standards body isn't going to be putting together their first phase stuff until 2018. So we're on the really bleeding edge of this right now. And the thing that I think, though, that's really cool is that once this all comes together, we're looking at speed improvements between 10 and 100 times over what we have today, and lower latency as well. So that's kind of cool. So what's happening right now is they're putting together, they meaning AT&T, Intel, and Ericsson, they're putting together the stuff that they need so that they can do their tests. They're planning to do some outdoor tests this spring, and then this summer they're going to set up some nodes for testing in Austin, I believe. And then the data that they've collected, that's all going to get used by the industry as they move forward and work on coming up with a 5G standard. So, John, you had a little chuckle, and I believe your chuckle is your way of saying, oh, I have some thoughts on this.
Well, I had some off-the-cuff thoughts. It's not deep technical stuff, but when I first heard about this, I thought two things. I thought, well, this is nice. It's always great to get faster speeds, but then faster speeds require higher frequencies, and higher frequencies generally mean less range. And then I thought, you know, this elusive concept of high-speed cellular data everywhere, percolating everywhere, no dead spots, and would eliminate the need for, you know, a cable modem. But that doesn't look like that's on the table. And then I started thinking about the battery power that's going to be required for these higher frequencies and higher throughputs on our iPhones. And
yeah, so we are talking about gigabit speeds.
Yeah, the battery technology better get really good, really fast. And of course, remember when Apple had to hold off on LTE for one cycle, I think, because of the original chip, LTE chip was chewing up the iPhone battery too much. So that had to be worked out. So it's good and it's bad. It's a mixture.
So I'm curious about the tech of this. Because the reading I've done, I'm kind of hoping we can sort this out together here, indicates that when we're talking about 5G, you know, we had 3G on our cell phones, mm-hmm. right? And then we had 4G, which was mostly LTE, depending on whether AT&T was involved in you know, displaying that or not, right? Because there was like 3G and a half, which was AT&T called 4G, and then mm-hmm. we have LTE, which is actually 4G by everyone else's definition. And now we have 5G.
Long-term evolution.
Right. But now we have 5G. We also have, and this is where the definition starts getting confusing as I started to research this, we also, with our home routers, we have 2.4 gigahertz, right? Mm-hmm. And we have 5 gigahertz connections, which define sort of the range, the frequency range of the radios that are in them. Based on what I can tell, when we talk about 5G for broadband in this way, it's also using 5 gigahertz as its operating range. Is that correct?
I'm not sure.
I'm pretty sure, based on what I'm reading here, it is. And so that's, and it's talking about 802.11ac, and but I mean, that's like,
so you're what you're reading is that 5G is utilizing the same frequencies and technologies as local Wi-Fi, just with a lot more power. Is that the
that's interesting, crazy to me, right? Because I mean, range, I mean, yeah, I know wireless does better when there's nothing in the way, right? So outside, yeah, you're going to get longer range than you will inside. But I mean,
if you punch enough power through the 5 gigahertz, you can increase the range. But now I'm wondering about, you know, getting through structures, because good old fashioned 800 megahertz was pretty good at getting through walls and buildings and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm just a little confused about all of this, because it's, you know, 4G doesn't use 4 gigahertz, right?
Right.
Yeah. I'm just trying to figure out where all that is. I mean, that's really fast. You're right.
I saw an NCIS Tuesday night where McGee was in the bowels of a ship at sea, and he was talking back to land on his cell phone.
Well, that's pretty impressive.
It was pretty impressive. Yeah, they must have had cellular microcells on every deck of the ship connected to a tower on the ship's mast or something.
Right. Isn't that what everyone does?
Right. Of course.
Yeah. Yeah. All those microcells that we've all retired because now we can do Wi-Fi calling.
Right.
Yeah. They're all going into ships so that NCIS people can talk underwater. Yeah.
It's crazy. Right, Dave, because we're using, you know, basically what we're using now is, you know, really like 4G uses, I guess it's in the 2.4 to 2.6 gigahertz range. So it's, yeah, I mean, it's theoretically possible.
So, you know, all right. So if they go,
you're right, because John's right. I mean, in order to get more bandwidth, you know, unless physics has changed, which we're pretty sure it hasn't yet.
No, as a matter of fact, we proved a little bit more of it yesterday.
That's right. Yeah. It's a little more concrete today than it was, say, Monday. You know, you need more higher frequency to have more bandwidth, and that comes with less range at any given power, you know, level.
Right. Okay. Now,
did I have that right, John?
Yeah, that's right. And when you do increase the power level on the cell towers, you don't want to get too close to one, probably.
Well, yeah, you know that. I mean, there's been, so I had the opportunity, almost had the opportunity, to put a cell tower in my backyard when we were in Connecticut. I was actually negotiating with AT&T for this. And I did a lot of research. Now, we were going to be moving anyway, but what they were going to pay me for this was about $100,000 a year. So I was just going to keep the house. I was obviously not going to sell the house because,
right, because you're getting $100,000 a year,
20-year lease on the, yeah, exactly. It was a $2 million contract, but it did not come to pass because there was and as there should be a certainly a town statute that, and I made, perhaps it was a Connecticut law that said the town gets right of first refusal before to put a cell tower or any sort of thing like this. The town has to say no before a private resident can say, you know, a private landowner, I should say, can say yes. And the town had said no many, many times. And so AT&T was actually running around asking people, hey, are you interested? And we just happened to own the top of a hill. So I reached out to them and they were like, oh yeah, that would be awesome. I'm like, yes, it would.
Yes, it would.
You might have had trouble selling the house if that.
Well, yeah, I wasn't ever going to sell the house because, I mean, other than, you know, pricing it with this, you know, whatever remained on the $2 million contract, because it was a 20-year lease that they were going to do, and it was about $100,000 a year. But unfortunately, again, it
talk
didn't
about
happen.
Rental. Talk about rental income.
No, exactly. Yeah, well, that's the thing is, I would rent the house just to have someone living there, but I could do it at such a reduced rate that I could just pick my renter, you know, which is great. You know, But I did. I looked into a lot of that. And, you know, a lot of those concerns are based on a lot of pseudoscience. And this won't come as any great surprise to those of us here. Being that close to a cell tower, being as close as our house would have been, which was not all that close. I mean, it was sort of up the hill 500 feet from where the house was. It's really not, you know, the radiation concerns aren't all that great and all that much different than pretty much anything else any of the rest of us are exposed to, in everyday lives. Power lines are worse.
Oh yeah.
You know, seriously, like way, 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 way worse than having a cell tower around.
Well, the power lines, you hear the air crackling.
Drive under a high power electric line on the highway and your radio goes out.
Right.
For a second or two.
Yeah.
You lose your phone call.
Yeah. Yeah, which doesn't happen with cell towers. I mean, it's not that much power. But, you know, I was happy to let my fellow townspeople believe that it was bad right up until the point that I signed the contract. And then I would have brought the science out and said, look, it's really not that bad. But you all thought it was, and that's why you didn't put the tower in your backyard.
And that's capitalism right there. Well done, Dave.
You know, if they want to believe something that benefits me, I'll hang on until we're locked in, and then I'll explain to them, no, it's all good. We're all in good shape here. I didn't do anything bad. I had your best interests in mind, in the back of my mind, but they were
there.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So now I guess we're just in that phase where we wait for all these different companies that are doing testing to start releasing some results, so we have some idea where the 5G standard is going.
What data rate did you mention earlier, Jeff?
AT&T is saying that they're expecting to get gigabit speeds out of this, and that it will be between 10 and 100 times faster than current 4G LTE.
So my question for you guys is, what new things will this enable? Not just faster in general and snappier response, but what unanticipated serendipitous breakthrough will this cause, if any?
Well, like anything, I mean, it will. High speed internet to the home changed everything, right?
Right.
Yes.
Always on internet in the house, and we're all old enough to have like experienced that in a very real way.
Oh, yes.
But I remember the first time I turned on, you know, full speed internet in my house. It was with an ISDN line, but it was still like, whoa, you mean it's always there?
It's this fast?
And it's this fast. Yeah, exactly. Right. It was a mind shift. So that's a good question to ask, John. There's a chart that CNET has. They say 3G, and here's the speeds that they use. 3G is 384 kilobits per second. In 2001, 4G is 100 megabits per second. In 2009, I would argue that it's more like 30 to 50, but still, you know, LTE is pretty fast. Mm-hmm. And they're saying 5G can go to 10 gigabits per second, but let's even just say that it's one. I mean, it's, you know,
yeah, just one gigabit.
I mean, it's already easy to transmit 1080p video.
Well, that's what they say is, how long would it take to download the 2-hour long Guardians of the Galaxy? This is the chart they have. 26 hours over 3G at 384 kilobits per second. And so they say what you could do while you're waiting is fly from New York to Sydney, including check-in times, right? And then at 4G, it's 6 minutes. So that was a huge shift, right? And you could run a quick mile or catch up on Facebook. And I'm thinking realistically that number is more like 12 minutes over what the 4G that I see when I'm in a city, you know, still, on my cell phone. But still,
that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, 26 hours to 12 minutes, and we're giving it the full 384 kilobits on 3G, which is as much of an argument as the 100 megabits on 4G. On 5G, they're saying at 10 gigabits, 3.6 seconds. So even if it's 1 gigabit, that's 36 seconds.
So we're talking not even a minute to download a full movie.
Right. It took us longer to explain this than it would
I saw a rumor the other day that Apple's going to do a 256 gigabyte storage in the iPhone 7 option.
That would be a good idea.
Yeah, it seems like that's where we're headed.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean,
download a high def movie in 3.6 seconds. You better have 256 gigs.
You got to have somewhere to put this data. That's right. Yeah. It's not just about, you know, you're not just doing performance testing. You're actually transmitting stuff you want to keep. Yeah. But imagine that, right? So now when I'm walking through the airport, I've tried. You know, I've got, most months I have enough data where we've got like 6 gigs left over or something. So I've done it where I'm changing planes or something and I've got an hour layover and I've tried to download a movie and, you know, in an hour from on my iPad and over LTE and it never works. You know, it just doesn't go fast enough. This might fix that. Of course, now what I'd have to look back to is my home upstream. Right, because that's a limiting factor. You know, is how fast if I'm downloading from home. If I'm downloading from iTunes, then that's not a limiting factor. They go very fast. Yeah, but that's, you know, that's handy.
Yes, it is.
We tend to think in terms of movies and video because those are the most intensive. But my brain is thinking about what other unexpected technology besides just movies, which are very large and complex, to maybe something else that would be enabled.
Yeah.
Don't know what yet. I'm continuing to think about it, but I think there's something going to happen.
Okay, John, the notion that you are thinking about this to me is pretty exciting because you think outside the box that so many people are trapped in, and I'm really excited to see what ideas you come up with.
You just want to see my brain explode, I know.
Well, yeah, but at least your brain has the ability to reconstitute itself.
We've seen this happen, folks.
It's like a Star Trek movie. It kind of curls up on the floor and then recoheres.
That's right. And it crawls back into John's head.
Right.
Yeah, it's an impressive thing to watch. Yeah. Hey, okay, there's another thing I want to hit before we wrap up, and we're getting close on time. And this is the whole patent lawsuit mess that just keeps growing and growing for Apple. And the latest being a lawsuit that I wrote about this morning from a company called Immersion. And they're suing Apple and AT&T for the haptic feedback technology that Apple uses in the iPhone 6 and newer and in the Apple Watch and in the Force Touch features that are in the iPhone 6S and the Apple Watch. And so another patent infringement lawsuit, and this is like the second or third this week, and then I think in the past couple weeks we've written up a couple other patent lawsuits that Apple is facing, and then there's appeals and just this ongoing mess. John, you came up with a comment as we were discussing this earlier, and I think we should explore that just a little bit.
Well, it all goes back to Macworld January 2007. I was sitting next to you, Dave, and Steve was giving his presentation of the iPhone.
I remember.
First up.
Yep, and Ryan was to my right, you were to my left.
And remember I was saying, I don't care how much it costs, before he had gotten to the price?
I do.
And
I remember
Steve
that.
Proudly said we've applied for, I think it was something like over 200 patents, and very proudly suggested that, you know, Apple had this thing all locked down, and that nobody was ever going to be able to duplicate this wonderful invention, and Apple had all these patents in place. Now, fast forward.
Steve was really good at that.
Yeah, he was.
Yes,
and that's what I thought of when Jeff told us about this lawsuit, because it seems like things have gotten a little bit out of hand, and new technologies and new patents are always kind of leaking out and falling into the wrong hands, and patent lawsuits are cropping up against Apple right and left. And the Lockheed Martin in me came out. I used to work for them. And the first thing I thought that somebody would do in this situation, Lockheed Martin, is they would call for a patent audit. And what I don't know if Apple's done this. They probably have. Maybe it's impossible to do. But being a physicist, I don't think many things are impossible. So if you can dream it, you can do it. So why not go through your patent library and figure out what patents have been negotiated, which ones are ironclad, which ones you tried to negotiate and failed, which ones that you kind of, you know, went ahead and just rolled over and just went ahead and said, well, we'll worry about licensing later. And just do a prioritized list of the status of every patent and sort of assign it a category. Mm. And then when you're all done with the patent audit, you've got a plan. You've got a working plan. You say, okay, here's the top five or six patents that are going to cost us a lot of money. Let's figure out how to acquire these patents, buy the patent troll, buy the patent, buy the company that owns them, and figure out how to eliminate this situation where you've got people, seems like weekly, knocking on your door for $1 billion. This has got to be resolved somehow, and maybe a patent audit would help. It's just an off-the-cuff idea. I don't know if it's possible or doable or whether Apple's really done it, but seems like a reasonable thing to do to me.
So the I guess I have a couple of questions, and this is my hack lawyer mind, you know, kind of running rampant here. So one of the questions is there any benefit to actually being able to claim ignorance, right? In this scenario, like, are the damages less if you can say, whoa, we didn't know? It may not. No, seriously. Right. I mean,
I'm not warm to that idea at all.
No, but you know, so here's where that kind of came from in my head, because as I'm saying it out loud, I realize probably not, you know, that patents don't work that way. But, here's the flip side of that. With a trademark, cause I've had these in previous businesses, they're a pain in the neck, especially for a small business to have a trademark, because you have to go after everyone that you know about. This is where ignorance is bliss, right? If you know of someone violating your trademark, you have to go after them. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, your inaction, your knowledgeable inaction becomes precedent for the next person who's using your trademark to say, hey, you knew about that person violating your trademark. You did not go after them. Therefore, you did not enforce your trademark. Therefore, your trademark doesn't exist, right?
And the court's going to say, yep.
And the court says yes, right? This is why we and like many other publications were able to use the term Mac, right? Macworld was the first. I believe they were the first because they came out the same day the Mac did. So I can't imagine there was anyone prior to that.
Not likely.
Not likely, right. But Apple never went after anyone for this. So by the time Steve decided he hated people using Apple's trade names in their, you know, in their company names, let alone their own product names, it was too late. There would have been too much precedent, right? But when people started with iPod-based sites and things like that, man, Apple went after
it. iPod.com.
Yeah, right. No, people, even just like, we didn't get one at iPod Observer.
I was really surprised too.
Yeah, because we did a lot of the research when iPod Lounge changed their name to iLounge, and when Bill Palmer's iPod, it became iProng. I can't remember what he called it before, but he was in on that too. In fact, we did a bunch of work with our attorney, and then actually wound up giving Bill a lot of that work, kind of on the house, because why not? We had already done it because we didn't need to worry about defending it. But in any event, so that exists with trademarks. I don't know enough about patent law, but there's a question there. Like if someone is aware of a patent violation and does not go out and enforce it, does that then render the patent invalid? And it might be very different with the trademark office, and it might not be different at all. I don't know that answer.
I think you keep it until the patent expires by the patent office regs.
Well, but trademarks are the same way, and yet
I don't know
if you don't enforce them.
The enforcement issue is different with trademarks. My understanding is that you don't have to worry about enforcing a patent infringement because it is yours until it expires.
And that's not true of trademarks though. See, yeah, I mean,
that's right.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well then there you go. So there's no benefit there for an audit, right? It would, if in fact trademarks were treated like patents, which it sounds like.
Well, I mean, I think the benefit of an audit would be to surface those that are at most risk and try to take preemptive action to forestall these lawsuits.
Yeah, because it's much easier to negotiate before you have a product out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. And if Apple's smart, they could do what a lot of large companies do, is have someone else go out and negotiate that on their behalf. And then Apple acquires this other company and the process inherits their rights to that patent, and all is good.
And they have done that very thing in the past.
Of course.
Yep.
And companies have been pissed off after the fact because they're like, hey, we could have gotten more money. And that's
correct. Yeah. And if you did all your homework, maybe you would have figured out that's what was going on. Or,
right.
Or put it in the thing that, you know, an acquisition of your company that includes a whole asset purchase does not include this or only includes this in these certain circumstances. And, you know, you start putting in clauses like that into the contract, you'll find out right away what the company's intentions with your patent are.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
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 Hey, we are out of time, but I think this is a great place where we could do some crowdsourcing. I'm betting that some of our listeners are pretty well versed in how the laws work, especially related to patents and protecting them. So, listeners, let me know: do the patents still stand if they are not defended? Or if Apple did an audit, would they need to then turn around and sue everyone that they feel is infringing on their patents? Let me know. You can hit me up on Twitter. That would be at TMO Daily. You can give me emails. That would be observations@macobserver.com. And you can leave comments in the show notes. I'll check all those places to see what you have to say. And with that, we really are out of time. So, Dave, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me. It's a nice way to end the week.
Yeah, really fun. And John, thank you for being here.
You bet. It was a pleasure.
A pleasure for me, too. Listeners, thank you for being here. I enjoy that we get to do this together every week. We'll see everyone again next week.